Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin. We have a doozy of an episode for you today. A doozy. First off, I'd like to thank our sponsor, which, of course, and still is, my lovely people at Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. I have a hard time saying L's. Blue. Do you say blue or blue? Like, for me, it's almost like blue, but I guess the right way to do it is say blue, blue. Amy and I use Blue Apron all the time. It forms strong family bonds because families that cook together, families that eat together, are families that talk together, and they hug, and they share a very animal experience that I think more people would enjoy if they had the opportunity, and that is cooking and eating together as a family. They have all these cool upcoming meals. They're always changing it up, like salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple. That's one thing I love about Blue Apron is they'll like throw something in there like pork and then like apple. And you're like, wow, that actually tastes really good together. And I never would have put that together myself because I've just been making pasta and pasta sauce since I was on my own. And then I got married and the wife needs you to change it up a little. Spicy shrimp, coconut curry with cabbage and rice, vegetable chili. I mean, listen, not all ingredients are created equal. They just have the right to be equal. Fresh, high quality ingredients make a real difference. So it's important to know where your food comes from. It ships right to your door. And it's very affordable. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Think about how cheap that is. Think about, yeah, you might be able to get a McDonald's meal for $6, but then you'll die. Huge variety, very flexible. You can customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options you can choose from that fit your needs. There's no weekly commitment. I love that. So you only get deliveries when you want them. It's easy. Each meal comes with step-by-step. You know, it's easy-ish. It's challenging enough to be fun. And it's guaranteed. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. And they will. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/Owen. That is my name, O-W-E-N. If you're German or Russian, you say Oven, and then you probably drink beer. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Hit pause right now on the podcast and order it. That's blueapron.com/Owen. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Because doing that helps support the podcast, and it also helps support your health. Welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? A very tantalizing, sensual podcast about comedy, failure, and there isn't anything sensual or tantalizing that I just said that. I don't know why. But yeah, it's going to be a great episode. And I want to give some shout-outs to the Patreon page, because Patreon's been growing. Patreon.com/WDTL, which is an abbreviation, or maybe an acronym. Does an acronym have to spell a word? I don't know. But, yeah, as you guys can donate to help keep the show going, and I want to shout out some people, because people, I always get an email notification when someone joins, and I always try to email them back to say thank you. And I haven't figured that out quite yet. But so I'm going to shout out this past couple weeks. Patricia, Nicole, Josh, Jules, Corey, Nikita, Chris, Ellen, Beth, Derek, Sarah, and Terry have all joined the ranks of our wonderful Patreon community. And you get more stuff. Like I upload some episodes that I do with my parents and my brother, more family stuff. And like I'm about to upload one that I did with my mom and dad called The Last Liberals. It's almost like The Last Emperor because liberalism is changing dramatically, and my parents are very interesting college professor types with really cool lives, and they don't really know how they fit into the current climate, and I'm sure they relate to a lot of you guys, because the definition of liberal has changed quite a bit, and that's part of this episode. So check that out. And you can donate $1, $3, $5, up to 25 bucks. A couple people did 25 bucks. Pretty blown away. But whatever you donate, you all get access to everything that I put up there. And there's some really cool people. You'll make friends. I see people making friends, which makes me happy. Because the listeners of this podcast are pretty much cool people that like to think about stuff and can change their mind on topics. And, you know, entertain dissenting views without getting pissed off. A lot of people that have thought about being comedians or are comedians or just want to see the other side of it, want to see the struggle of it, not just the kills. So really cool people. So check that out. Yeah, because in a small enough group, you can have access to everything because socialism, I believe, works very well in small groups. Not great in big groups. It's a whole other episode. But in a small enough tribe, people look out for each other. And whatever you can afford, throw it in. And yeah, listen to some more stuff. I just did Grand Rapids, Dr. Grins in Michigan last week, and it was awesome. A lot of podcast listeners came out, and I got to have drinks with some of you and get some good feedback. Because you can always email me at whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. I've had some awesome emails lately. Same with Patreon. Some of the messages I've gotten are like several pages of just really interesting stuff. And hopefully I can read some more of those on the podcast. But I always love hearing from you guys. But yeah, so to give you some feedback from my feedback, yes, I will have my wife Amy on more often. I promise. Some people say that she's the best part. And she hasn't been on in a long time, so I don't know how I feel about that. She'll be a major part of it when my book is done and coming out. It's almost there. My editor is awesome. We're really grooving. We're hitting a great groove. And she's a big part of the book because it's about relationships. It's going to be called You're Funny When You're Mad, about how to get through fights in a funny way. And a lot of people like my cultural, political analysis type stuff, so I'm going to do that up front. Some people like just hearing the clips. I'm going to do that too. And yeah, I'm going to try and make as many people happy as I can without changing who I am. I had 4 sellouts in Grand Rapids, which is good for me. And they were epic. Great people. And then 1 totally insane show, like totally insane. And the guys opening for me were so great. Shout out to Chris Shaw, Garrett Alinga. I just kept calling him Garrett. So I have a lot of respect for him. He's a great comic. I've just never actually said his name out loud. I also had a great conversation with a local comic named Jacque Marpa. She was really cool. I recorded some and we're going to do an episode. She had a really interesting perspective on being a woman in comedy. Not what you'd think. Very different perspective than the perspective you think. Which is very interesting. Yeah. Garrett recorded the Intense show. The one, the Spiral show, which is going to be awesome for Why Didn't They Laugh. It's perfect for Why Didn't They Laugh because there's one guy that wouldn't stop giving me the finger and shit escalated. But I haven't been able to edit that yet. I've just been able to edit some of the good shows. But I have some great stuff from the good shows. Unfortunately, they were very smooth, so I don't have any real bombs. But I have a good show for you today, nevertheless. Just to show you how good the crowds were, listen to what happens when I flip-flop the setup and punchline of a joke. And they were still with me. It's called loyalty.
And, I think the last popular hip-hop song I liked was, it's called It's Too Late to Apologize by Timbaland. And I stopped liking it because the man tricked me. And I'm not a big fan of magicians. I don't judge people if they're honest with me. If I feel like I'm being tricked, like when my dad took a quarter out of his ear when I was 7, and he goes, oh, go on the quarter. And I literally just go, you don't have to work anymore. You can stay home with your mom. And he goes, no, it was a trick. I never loved him again. Just kidding, I love my dad. Just kidding. But I don't like being tricked. It's not by Timberland. It's not by Timberland. It's by a band called One Republic. Timberland tricked us. This is the only thing Timberland contributed to the song. Produced Beethoven? Like back in the day, if it was like Beethoven was like, okay, you see, Beethoven was stone cold deaf, right? And even he'd be like, what the fuck? You can't aim. You want my fucking money back. That's how soft we've gotten, right? People tell me sometimes, like, do you think you have a drinking problem? Because you'll have like 5 drinks sometimes after a show. I'm like, Beethoven fucked so much he couldn't hear. Because he got it from syphilis, right? Like, Beethoven went deaf from syphilis. He fucked himself deaf. And he still wrote beautiful music. He wrote Ode to Joy deaf. And he still was fucking getting sucked. Why is something super funny that just happened? I flipped that joke. I was supposed to say that Sif was first, because that is the fact. So then when I say, you fuck so much you went deaf, it's an explosive laughter. But I said that first. So you guys looked at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? And the punchline of that joke is he fucked so much he went deaf. But it's only funny if you know it was from Sif. Like when you flip it, it literally it makes it a little like, whoa. And when you don't flip it, it's like a nice, smooth, nice thing. That's interesting. But, you know.
Another thing I've noticed is now that I don't touch politics at all on stage, not that I ever really do, but now it's zero. Something fascinating is happening. People after the show from all sides of the political spectrum will tell me that I have to get our message out. Like that I'm one of their guys. Bear in mind, they have no idea what my message is politically. Human nature, for the most part, isn't divided. So when I do male-female stuff and music and culture stuff, extreme liberals and extreme conservatives both see me as one of their own. And I do find that very beautiful. I find it very beautiful. I sounded almost like Bane. I find that beautiful. Today's episode is all about gender. Gender issues are the reason I can't call myself a liberal anymore. For a while, I was calling myself a liberal with a question mark, like I'm a liberal. They say it's harder to switch parties from your parents than it is religion. And I see that. It's weird. I'm not really part of a party, but I can't really call myself a liberal. I was a guest on Louder with Crowder, Stephen Crowder. Great dude. I was on there this week. We talked about how I moved to LA a liberal and I left a conservative, and none of my opinions changed in that process. The goalposts kept moving. And I know you guys relate. I see liberals as part of an outrage Ponzi scheme that's out of control. It's the Bernie Madoff of outrage. There's no catharsis. There's no end. Only more outrage. And every time they reach their goal, and I think everyone's going to be happy and start high-fiving again, a new one is made that is even more ridiculous and impossible to achieve. unless they're trying to change the entire world and how everyone thinks, they don't know what to do with themselves. It's like that White Stripes. I know what to do with myself. Da-da-da. I just don't know what to do with myself. I am a liberal in the sense of how I thought it was defined. Liberal used to mean, it was almost like a personality type. It's disheveled, open-minded, creative, you know? Conservative would mean industrious, orderly, and focused. And these two groups of people need each other. And they shouldn't be at odds. Steve Jobs is a classic conservative personality type. And Wozniak is a classic liberal. One, Wozniak, wants to tinker in his basement and invent things only someone with a wide open mind and untied shoelaces can do. And the other takes that idea and sells it to the world with grit, rage, and focus. And they need each other. And that's what I thought I was. I thought I was the classic liberal type who can't, you know, his hair is all over the place, but can play Bach by ear. Like, I was like, I fit in with the artists. But then all these social issues started getting tied to the fabric of these two concepts. I was raised by two college professors in a house with constant influx of people from all over the world with all different backgrounds. I'm pretty sure that's why I'm impossible to indoctrinate. You know, we'd have German students, Spanish students, gay, straight, Saudi students. My piano teacher was transgendered, not when I started with her. I started when she was she, and then she became a dude, and she did it on Halloween, which is a good time to transition when you have an 11-year-old student, because I thought she was going to Halloween as a dude, and then Halloween never ended. You know, by Thanksgiving, I knew something was going down, and then it was cool. But that was before it was cool. That was before it was, like, trendy. So, you know, I got to see the reality of the situation. One of my dad's students brought back a piece of the Berlin Wall for my dad. You know, stuff like that. My brother and I once broke danced. We broke danced for chocolate when I was 8 years old from a bunch of Germans who were staying with us who kept going, "Zell, yes, you want the chocolate?" Spanish women who didn't wear bras would be staying with us. You know, I've also done comedy all over the world. I've done Montana and San Francisco in the same week, Iraq, Miami. I know people. So you can't tell me all Muslims are evil, but you also can't tell me Islamists aren't a threat to America and are not totally insane. I've seen both. I know both well. Some see illegal Mexicans as servants. Some see them as job competition. Some see transgendered people as victims. Some as people with mental health problems. Some see guns as evil. Some see guns as necessity. And everyone is right from their perspective. You know? Liberals have become the group of the open-minded. Liberals went from the group of open-minded to the group of closed-minded. And conservatives seem to be the only ones running the numbers because conservatives don't seem to have changed. And liberals have went, you know, I think they all have mercury poisoning at this point. So just being just average conservative from the 90s is more sane than modern liberal. I'm not talking the cult of Trump conservative because that's a whole different thing with followers that are some completely racist and others who aren't racist at all. Full spectrum of that guy. But he's not even on the political spectrum. He's nothing. He's his own tweeter. Even with the liberal mindset leaving itself weak to certain open-minded traps, you know, there are traps. There's Trojan horses. I still stayed on board because I'm a company man. I don't like jumping ship. Lately, I can't, however, and a lot of people agree with me and can't say anything because they will be fired from their stupid shows. You know, if you're making 30 grand a week, you can't really say anything you believe. You just say whatever people tell you. And it's both great and sucks. Islamic Middle Eastern culture is not good. They put women in corners and they cover them with sheets. And rape is legal. I will not say that That is Islamophobia. I will not agree with that. I love women. I love female freedom. I think it's messed up. Now, secular Muslim Americans who want nothing to do with Sharia law are not only fine, a lot of them are extremely educated, extremely nice. Like Faraz Ozel, guy who opens for me all the time on the road, very close friend of mine, very good-hearted guy. You can't mix those two types of people up. And I think the left is fucking with people on that. You know, some of the nicest people I know. But, you know, Islamists are absolute monsters in my eyes. And culture isn't the same. There is no cultural relativism. I'll get to that. I think affirmative action is not good. I've read books and books and books and all the numbers. Everything says it's not good, including Malcolm Gladwell, including Thomas Sowell. You know, one's half black, one's full-blown black, so it's tough to call them racists. Trying to create a classroom or workplace environment that forcibly matches the demographic of an area is absurd. There are infinite human categories. Tall, short, left-handed, right-handed, rich, poor, smart, dumb, attractive, ugly, and an infinite spectrum within all of those. So you can literally divide yourself for infinity. It's kind of like the old physics mind thing where you, what's it called, a mind experiment where you go halfway to a wall. Every time you go to a, you go halfway to a wall, that's infinite. Infinite. You'll never reach the wall. If you go half every time, you can do that for an infinite amount of times and never reach your destination. That's what happens when you subdivide people. Imagine if instead of race, you subdivided people on their dick length, which I believe is more of a determinant of a personality than their race. To focus only on race is destructive, inaccurate, and ironically, very, very racist. Nigerian Americans make more than on average than Caucasian Americans. Same with Indian Americans from India, you know, dot, not feather. Feather's pretty fucked, but dot is killing it. You know, race has nothing to do with anything. Culture does, however. In Thomas Sowell's book, Black Redneck White Liberals, which I've been talking about all the time, changed my life. Then I started reading all of his books. He illustrates the point perfectly with examples all over the world, not just in America. He begs people to give him an example where it isn't true. Not where it is, where it isn't. Just like American secular Muslims being fine and Middle Eastern Islamists being a horror show, it's the same with skin tone. But even more so, because Muslim is still an ideology. Skin is nothing. Any height. All right. Well, height's a whole different thing. All right. I know rich people who are the most deranged, loveless, narcissistic psychos. And I also know rich people who have amazing families and they love their children and they are awesome. You can't decide who deserves special treatment because of any one factor. And I think money is more of a factor than skin tone. That all that determines is whether or not you can get skin cancer or whether or not you need to take vitamin D pills. And they're always moving and shifting. You know, being Japanese in America in 1948 was a nightmare. 1955, nightmare. Being Chinese American when we're building the railroads was a nightmare. Being Irish American when a lot of my ancestors came here was a nightmare. Now it's fine. Everything keeps moving and shifting. I have privilege, but it's cultural. My family was poor but educated and gave me the building blocks and a healthy self-esteem to thrive. That is my advantage. I do have an advantage, but it's not my skin. It's my culture. There are no differences in races. There are only differences in culture. Liberals have decided to become racists and cultural relativists. It's extremely the opposite in reality. They seem to value a skin color over a culture. And all cultures are... They act like all cultures, like a jihadist from Afghanistan, should be treated the same as a Presbyterian from New Hampshire. No! That's verifiably wrong. To truly be open-minded and to truly be liberal, ironically, you can no longer be a liberal. They are confronted with a Korean family who comes to America not speaking a word of English yet, owns a dry cleaning franchise in under 7 years. But they continue ringing the bell of the shadow of slavery and how it oppresses black people despite it ending over a century ago. Sure, the oppressive attitudes and systems in place kept black people down. Jim Crow, all that stuff. Of course. No one's taking that history away. It was brutal. And if you really think about why American racism was so much worse than most of the world's, it's actually because they had to justify democracy and slavery at the same time. And the only way to say all men are created equal and we own men is to say they aren't men. So it was a way to force this cognitive dissonance, these two opposing ideas at the same time with a lie. And that's why you don't see it in Brazil or Europe, where the Slavs were slaves forever. That's why they're called Slavs. That literally means slave. Slavery is not new. What's new is living in a democracy, which was very new, and having slavery. In order to own a man, you have to say they're not a man. And that's really bad. But look at Clarence Thomas. His grandfather was a sharecropper. You know, I never agreed with the man's politics, but take a step back and look at it. His grandfather was basically a slave, and he was about to be sworn into the Supreme Court, and a panel of rich white people like Ted Kennedy, who has actually killed a woman, grilled him about whether or not he's watched porno and talked about it in front of Anita Hill. He almost didn't get the job because of that. Ted Kennedy killed a chick. That party doesn't support black people. It supports party members. It supports an ideology, which is becoming kind of Marxist. When you see Obama talk about the wage gap at 77 cents on the dollar, and we know that isn't true. Thomas Sowell disproved that in the early 80s. Look it up. One must ask the question, are these people knowingly trying to be intellectually dishonest? I now believe yes. They are not good people. And I think they know it. Like, if you push lies to divide a nation, you're a dick. Trump functions as a straw man, he's a sacrificial pawn. Because every time you criticize the left, you're forced to defend Trump, who is on his own playing field. And no one understands him. He's like a rabid wolf. So good luck with that. But I could still be okay with all that. Race isn't a major factor in my life. I don't care about affirmative action. Fine. That's fine. All that shit. I'm fine. But this is when I couldn't stay. The biggest fallacy the left is putting forward at this point is gender. And that brings me to the point about this whole podcast. Bear in mind, my career rests on assumptions like men and women aren't the same. Okay, let's look at trans rights. The ultimate Trojan horse. When you are painted the picture of a young trans child unable to use a bathroom at a state-funded school, your heart breaks. Mine did. Then run the numbers. How many trans children are there? I'm guessing zero or close to zero. Maybe they don't know they are yet, but, you know, how do you know you're anything when you're going through puberty? And the ones that are trans, it's like a young teen, are probably pushed that way by their parents, who are awful. I went through a phase where all I wanted to do was make cloth with my loom, play piano, and sing opera with my dad. I had no interest in sports, and a really good pun made me shriek with delight. I was chubby and had a high voice. Was I a woman trapped in a man's body, or just a human? Of course, trans people exist, but I don't think it's healthy or ethical to make that decision while someone's still going through puberty, which is the original transition. Hormones pumping through your body, and then a medical field that still has been completely unproven is pumping the opposite hormone through your body. I think that's child abuse. Even as adults, hormones have a disastrous effect on the human body. Ask athletes that take testosterone. How do you think it affects a female frame? Now, why is this a Trojan horse? And by the way, I'm not attacking trans people. I'm still very close to my piano teacher. He's great. His name's Larry now. He's awesome. But you can't tell me that pumping yourself with testosterone your whole life doesn't take years off your life. It's a Trojan horse because it sets a legal precedent. That's the only reason I care. And the gender is an idea and not a reality. Think about how destructive that is and how untrue it is. that having a penis and testicles and testosterone and a male frame has nothing to do with being male. I can't choose to be female. Think of the legalities. If I'm going to prison, I can just transition to, so I'm not a man, and I have to go to an all-female prison, but I still got my penis in an all-women's prison. Can I play on a girl's soccer team? I identify as a woman. If there's enough legal precedent, you can justify that. Can I apply for grant money from the government to start a female business? If you love women, your wife, your mother, your daughter, your sister, your friends, you should be against this. This only hurts women. There is a percentage. The woman of the year was a goddamn man. There's a percentage of the population that has a sex change, does the hormone therapy, and everything is great. There are, you know, they're now the other sex, and they want to be treated as the other sex. They're now a woman or now a man. Great. It's fine. No one has a problem with that. I'm fine with that. Most people are fine with that. Seeing Caitlyn Jenner, who still has a functioning dick and balls, who also has sex with women. Now his Olympic records no longer say Bruce Jenner. They say Caitlyn Jenner, like a woman won all those. So in 1,000 years, the aliens will think a woman was an Olympic, beat all the men. That's crazy. That is dismantling reality. The left talks about fake news. Well, they're operating in fake reality. And this can't last. And this isn't political. This is cultural. This is a fight against reality. And it can't last because the only reason it lasted so far is because of compassion shields. I kind of invented that term. We are good apes. I know we're good. I've been around this world. I've made the whole world laugh. And I know we're good. Our hearts are good. We want to protect the weak and support the brave. It's in our DNA. When phrased a certain way, any of these things can sound like civil liberties. But now we're starting to see the tyranny of it. 91 genders with repercussions for not knowing them. Canada, progressive Mecca. A comedian can be sued for telling a joke. They can take money from a comedian for an offensive joke. Who gets to determine offense? A professor can be fired for suing the wrong gender or for using the wrong gender. You can fire a professor for using the wrong gender in Canada. And I'm not talking male, female. I'm talking like Z and shit that you've never even heard of. These are major issues with major consequences that none of us want to face. Racial affirmation or affirmative action is toxic because it forces a people, ironically, to hold on to a terrible racist past that everyone wants to get through. Nazis were done. Why is this now a thing again? The Westboro Baptist Church that gets all this press has 16 total members. More people have been on the fucking moon. We don't need more conversation. We don't need more discussion. We don't need more knees during fucking Super Bowls. We've been beaten. This thing has been beaten to death. And I know tons of white people have been in trailer parks for generations since before the Emancipation Proclamation. They are just as trapped from their messed up culture that doesn't value education and promotes violence and consumerism. They're just as trapped as black Americans. And if we keep saying it's only skin color and gender identity, the real people that need real help and real opportunities get overlooked. And that is why liberals went from the party of the compassionate to the party of the tyrannical. Because I do actually care about people. And I'm not going to pretend that this is good or okay. I was always and still am pro-choice. But when you hear Lena Dunham say she wishes she had an abortion, a chill goes down your spine, right? Maybe we should hold life at a more sacred level. I don't think it's possible or ethical to legislate a woman's body. But can we at least keep the process to very early in the pregnancy? And can we at least kind of enforce a culture that doesn't take pride in this? I think women have experienced a lot of trauma around the issue of abortion, and sometimes they overexert themselves in the other direction and take a lot of like abortion pride. It's not something to be proud of. It's something to do when you feel it's in your best interest to do so, and you have a right over your body. But don't act like it's a sign of strength and femininity to terminate a life. Who knows when life begins? That's what Roe v. Wade was really about. It didn't legalize abortion. It said that they didn't have the ability of determining when life begins. Neither do I, neither do you, neither does anybody, right? But there's a gray, weird, murky area. And I think it should be legal to perform. In the same way that it's legal to turn off the machines of a brain-dead loved one. It's for in everyone's best interest sometimes to just let it go. And it should feel hard. You should feel loss, even if it's the right thing to do. You shouldn't be shamed, but you also shouldn't have pride. You shouldn't think that you wish you could have unplugged the life of your mother, Lena Dunham. That would be terrifyingly hard and sad. It's a tough decision, and one that I won't judge or apply any shame at all. Who's to say that pulling out isn't terminating a life or using a condom? Who knows when it starts? But for God's sake, admit it isn't easy. Or else the narrative starts infecting our whole world that life doesn't matter. And we continue to become a culture of trolls, a culture of know-it-alls where no one's trusted and everyone's criticized by people that aren't experts from their basements, online, from their little phones. We become, the worst part, unkind, uncivil. And I love kind. I love civil. I love saying hi to people and having them say hi back. My family and I went to New York City 2 days ago, and it was great. Someone gave Amy a piece of chocolate for breastfeeding. People kept saying hi. Walter kept getting compliments for being so cute. It was really good. We are good. And don't let these fucking cable news networks and Twitter trolls make you think that the world is bad, that they're bad people. They're good people that are put in crazy situations. And we use these compassion shields to shield ourselves from reality. That a 14-year-old trans kid trying to pick a bathroom is not the issue at hand. If we're going to talk about bathrooms, I say we get bathrooms for mothers with kids. What if you have a 4-year-old boy that just shit himself and you're a mom alone somewhere where there's only male, female? Do you bring him into the girls' room or the boys' room? Probably a family type place. Why can't trans people have family stalls? And why are we injecting 14-year-olds with hormones? My livelihood depends on the basic premise that we can all agree, a given. In logic, it's called a given. X equals 4, Y equals 9. These are givens. That men and women are different. There's a spectrum, but they're different. So, on a happy, funny note, let's analyze one of my jokes beat for beat on the truths that had to go into a joke that works. And as we do this, think about the dystopian hell that would enter the life of a comedian, a writer, a prison guard, when gender no longer matters and you can choose your gender. My theory is this is a precursor to a world of avatars, that some people identify as a dragon, other people identify as a sock, and I am not fucking joking. There are people that think they are a dragon and they cut their nose and ears off. I'm dead serious. Okay. Down the line, when the world is Matrix and we're all just 900-pound pieces of shit somewhere, just operating a fucking controller, sure, be a big, beautiful black woman when you're a little Jewish dude. Go for it. That's fine. But that's in the Matrix. In reality, men and women matter, and they're different, and women should be respected, and men should be respected, and God bless America. So that's my little cultural and political take, and now we're going to get into the comedy section. Yes. Thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Now we're going to get more funny. But I like to give a little bit of what people need, you know, because some people love this shit. And I believe it. I stand behind it. I feel like creepy telling people I'm a liberal now because of all the progressives. There are great liberals. Don't get me wrong. But when you see the leading voices agreeing with this type of fucking madness. Now, I was raised Catholic. I remember what it's like to live a lie. And it's also funny how like Christian doctrine and some of these doctrines that were always considered so stupid are now being proved right by science, like Jonathan Haidt and a lot of these people that study happiness, that, you know, a lot of these religious principles is what makes you happy. Love your neighbor like yourself. All these things are what make people happy. It's not money. It's not possession. It's not selling out Madison Square Garden. I know people that have sold out Madison Square Garden that have called me in the middle of the night because they want to put a gun in their mouth. So Happiness is our lives, our families, our kindness, our goodness, our civility. When you say, the Dalai Lama had a great quote that when you seek revenge on someone else, you might as well poison yourself to poison someone else. And you see it in politics too. Every precedent they do, imagine your enemy has that now. That's why I was against Obama's gun regulation. Imagine if now Trump has the same one. There's no person that loves Obama and Trump. I don't think that person exists. So imagine all the executive power you give the person you agree with. Imagine it going into the hands of your worst enemy. That's why government should be a series of keeping them in check so they don't have power over us, that they don't have the ability of overturning Congress. We have to vote on stuff. That's what a democracy is. And part of democracy is not getting what you want and sucking it up and going back to work. All right, let's get funny. I have been working on this one joke for about 2 years now. It's my snap joke, but it's been expanding and expanding. And, you know, with all the talk in the news about gender and whatnot, and I just wanted to analyze it. I just wanted to take one section of my Why Didn't They Laugh podcast and analyze why did they laugh and what we can learn from that. And I can learn from that, because the thing about comedy and the reason it's so terrifying to dictators and people that want to suppress the freedoms of individuals is because you can't lie. When someone laughs, it reveals that it's real. It's really one of those things that you can't control, and that's what you can't. Propaganda doesn't affect comedy. It's almost like it has this shield. And that's why comedians, the political correct movement, is so anti-comedy, because they don't want to control. They want us controlled, but it's not possible. Ha ha ha, because people just laugh. It's like coming. You stroke a wiener or a clitoris enough, people are going to start coming. I don't care what government you have in place. All right, so let's check out this beginning.
I like being married. It's fun. It's a good time. But I've learned something. You don't know a woman until you marry her, and then you watch her watch the show Snapped on the Oxygen Channel. It's a whole genre. You may not have seen Snap, but you may have seen Wives with Knives or any of these other, or any of these other wonderful programs about real life women who murder their real life man. And, you know, it's narrated by a woman with an oddly understanding tone. And,
all right, so far, the reason I love talking about Snap and why I use that as an example is because it's pretty undeniably, like, when you're watching it, when women watch it especially, they have this feeling of like almost empowerment, where they're rooting for a killer. And it's based on gender. Like, Snapped is only women murdering men. Like, you can't imagine a show of just men murdering women and having anyone possibly root for the killer. So you see these women start laughing because it's almost like when you're caught watching porno, where the guise of sanity is being removed, where there's no way you can really justify watching 15 of these in a row without admitting that they're pretty rough. All right, let's continue.
You know, they always take a hard turn. It's like Tina had to move to a new town because Brian got a job, and she missed her mother. So she got into online gambling and then shot him in the head while he was asleep. And I'm like, Jesus. And I look at my wife to like laugh, and she's like, that's what happens. I'm like,
that's the first real big laugh, because people are assuming I'm just going to mock the women and not be in it, you know? So when I show that my wife does the same thing, it's both funny and a relief. There's a catharsis to it. And women do have a way of justifying their insane behavior, and men usually lie about their insane behavior. And I noticed that twice in my relationship and marriage. One time, Amy and I were discussing a 13-year-old boy that had been raped by his 35-year-old female teacher. And she said that the kid should pay child support. And I remember being like, what the fuck? Dude, if a woman's raped, all bets are off. Like, she can literally just go shoot up a bank and everyone would be like, oh, she's, you know, she's in a lot of pain. But, like, a 13-year-old boy, that's still statutory rape. And I know it's not the same because it's just whatever's putting in has an easier time than getting put in. I get that, like, it's not the same. Like, a 35-year-old man and a 13-year-old girl is infinitely creepier, but it still has massive psychological trauma on the young boy. And to then put him in economic peril. Okay, and then the other example, the other thing I wanted to discuss with that was, damn, I can't remember. Oh yeah, the show Cheaters, where whenever they catch a cheater, the guy is always like, it's not my dick. No, it's not my dick, that's another guy's dick. And women are like, if you weren't always at work, I wouldn't have to fuck your brother. And it's just, it seems fairly universal. So that's why I think that got a laugh. So let's continue.
You think that's a valid kill? But the dude just moved. And she's like, she missed your mom. Like, do you not love your mom? And I'm like, so fear runs down my spine.
Okay, that little thing about she loved her mom, do you not love her mom? That's called a straw man argument, which you see in politics all the time, where if you're pro guns, people say, oh, so you think it's cool that little kids get shot at school? You know, it's a basic fallacy that, you know, for most of human existence, ever since Plato, you got to kind of follow these rules. But now all bets are off, where if you, you know, if you like Hillary Clinton, you hate the troops. If you like Trump, you support rape. You know, it's called a straw man. And so this is an example of your wife giving you a straw man where it's like, you think a murder's crazy. And now she's saying, oh, so that means you don't love your mother. So it's best to not argue those points because you can't win. Because once you start arguing that you love your mother, you concede a little bit, you know? So, yeah, so now we're at this point.
Because if she sees that that's okay, I'm screwed, you know? So I can quickly figure out how to not die. And there's nothing like a threat that makes you learn. Because I love my wife. I'm going to be with her for the rest of my life. But I also like life. Like, I want to stay on the planet. I'm a big fan. So I have to figure it out. Because I now realize she is one of the greatest threats to me. And I think I cracked the code.
Okay, so that section is just basically saying the human nature fact that you learn the fastest when there's a threat. You know, I used to do a bit about how Americans only speak one language. And I did this long thing with this French guy. He's like, how many languages do you speak? And I'm like, one, because you're speaking mine. Basically, I don't know how to make a canoe because I don't live on a river in the 16th century. So you can kind of skate through life sometimes in a relationship if you feel you're always okay. But when there's a little bit of that threat where you're like, oh man, so when she's mad at me, she might fucking end my life. That's when you really learn. And that's the meat of the joke is now. And this joke is about communication more than anything else. It's about conflict management. So check this out.
I don't like this gender fighting. I never have. You know, it's like, you're stupid. No, you guys are stupid. It's like, we need each other, you know? Because men cannot make life, which is the closest thing to magic in this world. And women can't reach all the shelves. And you know that. And you can think you're going to get a step stool, but you won't. You need us too, and you know we do. So let's work this thing out.
When you're diving in this deep of water, which is I am at this point, I'm about to say some pretty crazy stuff. It always helps to show how valuable the people you're talking about are. Shows humility and be honest, which this is honest. Like forming life in a womb, Elon Musk can't do that. Like no one can do that. No man, the smartest man in the world with all the money in the world can't make life in a womb. You know, you can make a sheep, maybe, like a clone or some shit, but it just isn't the same. So, and then the whole thing about the step stool that actually has come from hecklers. Like one time I was like, and you can't reach all the shelves, which is funny in its innocence. And then one chick was like, I got a step stool. And I was like, no one believes you're going to go buy a step stool. You're not going to put that down on your list when you go to Target. You're just going to buy other stuff because you're just going to forget about it. And that was getting laughs. So I figured I'd cut him off at the pass. All right, let's keep going.
And I think people pretty much have good intentions and everything gets derailed by communication. And I figured it out. Men need orders. Specific, direct orders. We want to do stuff for you. That's why we're on the planet. That's why men are here. What do you want? I'll do it. Tell me. With very clear language. Directly what you want. And then I will do it. I will complete the task. Be specific.
Like the repetition of be specific, it's pulling a laugh out of them because it's foreshadowing. Where you see where I'm going with it. But me just saying those things aren't saying those things. Like I'm saying, you can tell it's a criticism of how vague women can be. But I like when you stay positive, but you repeat the positive in almost a passive aggressive way, it sets a tone where you can't get mad at me because I haven't said anything. But you know my intention, which ironically is a female way of communicating. Which you'll see right here.
Women want to do awesome stuff for you too, unless you use very direct language. Then you're a piece of shit.
That addresses the issue of intent, which is what culture and society seems to have forgotten, that it's not the word you use, but what your intention is behind it. And so I'm giving women all the credit for intention, which they deserve. Women deserve. They're very, very good people in general. So it's not an issue of intention. At this point, I'm trying to establish that I'm not judging a woman so that it allows a safe environment where I can about to start saying some real truths.
I'll give you some examples. So my wife and I are sitting on the couch, and she's like, it's really cold in here. I was like, I know. I gave her that look like, I get it, I've been there. And then I went back to wondering why glue doesn't stick to the inside of the bottle. You know, I got some theories. Maybe there's a coating. Maybe it needs a vacuum and it only reacts to air. But then you need it to be really sealed or else it gets like rock hard. Rock hard. Not vacuum, but rock hard.
That section of the glue is all about space and letting people think. I used to rush it and say, thinking about how glue doesn't stick to the inside of the bottle. And then I'd just be right into the next thing. That is a multi-level joke where you have to actually think. You have to give the question respect in order to laugh because it's silly and pedantic or pedestrian. I don't know which word is right there. But and every day, and there really is no consequence to the answer of that. But it is interesting in a weird way because you never thought about it. And then as you allow people into your mind of laughing to yourself just at rock hard, you're now revealing the simplistic nature of men that isn't mocking men, because the original question is interesting, but at the same time it's saying the tone of the uncomplexity of it.
And out of the corner of my eye, my wife's like, and the chattering gets pretty loud, but that's not her fault. She's cold. That's an involuntary reflex to cold, but it is annoying, so I turn the TV up to drown it out. I can't be distracted.
Like, I've earned that laugh of drowning out the cold because I empathized first. I said, that's not her fault. That's an involuntary reflex to cold. So that gives me, it's my intention now. My intention of drowning her out with the television isn't because I find her annoying. Because I've established that her intention isn't to be annoying. It's an involuntary muscle twitch to cold, but it is annoying me. But that's no longer a shot at her. So now we can relish in the laughter of it. And it's starting to have cathartic reflexes where people are now forgiving each other in their relationship. because maybe when they did that thing that seemed so annoying, it wasn't about me. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to offer relief. All right, let's keep going.
Eventually she gets up, gets a blanket, sits back down. In my mind, I'm proud of her. I'm like, wow, that's a really good move. She's smart. And I go back to happiness, just thoughts. That's what I was feeling. What she was feeling was much different. What happened then for her, she started replaying that event over and over in her head, quietly, showing nothing, it's all inside. And now she gets a theory. And then she time travels around her relationship, collecting anecdotal evidence to fit her theory. It's called confirmation bias. It's literally a thing. So, and now she's debating whether or not she should even bring it up. You know, she's like, maybe I should just not bring it up. It's probably better for everybody. But I deserve to bring it up. You know, and this back and forth now is raising her heart rate. So that eventually, an hour later, and I have no idea what she's talking about, she just out of nowhere goes, do you even give a shit about me? Okay,
I'm now showing something that would easily offend women, which is that they're crazy. But I'm showing the steps, and all those steps are so valid and so lived by women that they have to give it to me. Because I'm showing the struggle of like not sounding, you know, of that they want to, their intention is to be good and their intention is to not cause drama, but they also have self-esteem. You know, that wrestling nature is what allows that laugh. Because I'm now at this point, if I just used a hacksaw, that I can't achieve this laughter. It has to be through empathy. Because when you dive deep enough with empathy, people let you do it because they feel good that you understand what's going on in their head. And that's the only way to heal. And this is just one side. Wait till I do the men's side. I don't pull punches. I'm not on a team. Because the only victory is less war. All right, let's keep going.
I have no idea. So I react the way all men will react with a face that's just like, baby, what the hell are you talking about? And that fuels the fire because that's one of her other theories. That she's like, you don't even care. You don't even know what you do. I care so little, I don't even know I don't care. That's another theory that just got reinforced. So now I'm like, you sound crazy. You think that's crazy? You think that's crazy? Now you're yelling at each other and you don't know why. And there's no end. It's toxic. There's no way to solve it because you don't know what it is. And it's so bizarre because that's why if you're with a girl that you love and you like, and you're like, she's great, stay with her. Because there's nowhere to go. Like, they're all crazy.
Okay, I just called all women crazy, and they exploded with laughter. Why? Because I'm also reinforcing monogamy. Because, and I'm not lying. This is all real. And they know it, because that's how you make it in a marriage, and in a relationship, is you admit what you are. And I love The Hero's Journey, which is Campbell, writes all about the power of myth and stuff. And there's all these, the hero with a thousand faces. And right now I'm constructing myself as the hero that is now returning from the quest and is ready to report to the people what he's learned. So I have to establish that I've been through war to find the knowledge that I'm now ready to give. And that is not a lie. I have been through gender war and relationship war and love war and hell to get to where I am, which I still, me and Amy still have arguments, but the real love comes from understanding. And this is about to, I now earned it. I now just said, women are crazy. And they said, thank you. Now, do I keep striking or do I pull back and give them something, which is what I do, obviously. I give them the gift of knowing they're not crazy. That's the whole point. All right, listen.
The sooner you earn that, the more you can get on with your life. Because it's a young man's fallacy to think there are options. You know? I'd be like, man, I like this girl. oh, she's crazy, I gotta get another girl. And then I get with another girl and I'm like, what are the odds? But this one's also like a mental patient. And then I get with another girl and I'm like, what's going down here? These chicks are liquid shit, crazy. And then I realized the definition of crazy is actually doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, which is what I was doing. And then I realized that being a man isn't being with a ton of women, like in that Groundhog's Day type experience, because that's easy. It's easy. It is easier than just looking into the eyes of a mad woman and staying. You know? Just letting her just do, like, go insane and just don't move your feet. Because it passes over you. And then you get the knowledge that women aren't crazy. What it is they think an observation is an order. That's the whole problem. That's when the road splits in the woods, right? When your girl says, it's really cold in here, they expect you to at that point be like, what makes cold? And then you solve a riddle. I swear to God, they expect you.
Okay, so at this point I help men out because, or women, with a checkered past of being with a lot of people, you can show that with the intention of trying to find a good person and you keep finding crazy, it makes you more likable. Like I've extended that section for another minute where I'm like, and then, you know, woman after woman after woman. I make it a joke of like all the women. And then I show that by the literal definition of crazy, I was the one being crazy. And then that is, you know, it's powerful in all aspects of life to show mercy. When you have women willing to let you call them crazy, they're admitting it. And you pull back and say, I'm actually the crazy one. Now you're off to the races. Now at this point, they're looking at me for the answer. Tell us the answer. Okay.
To infer what the best route is at that point. Like, an observation to a woman is an actionable order. To a man, that is not true. Like, if a man says to another man, it's really cold in here, the other guy's like, I know, right? Seasons. It's like, seasons. Like, you're just commiserating about life. You know, but not a woman. And the thing is, they're not doing it to trick us. This is the biggest kicker. They're doing it to be nice, to sound not bossy and bitchy. That's one of their fears. I just don't want to sound bossy. They speak in subtext. They say nothing and it means everything. Does that make sense? That's how they talk to each other. You ever see women with each other? They do the same shit to each other. You know, like, and men are flabbergasted. You know, like, you're like a girl, you go to like a party or something, and your buddy's wife is like, oh, so great you guys are here. You didn't bring wine? That's fine, we got plenty of it. Come on in. And your wife's like, she is such a fucking bitch. And you're like, she said it's fine. They have wine. Like, I don't...
Okay, now I'm using language that you wouldn't be able to use with a woman. But you can now, because all women know that that's true, that the most vicious misogyny can come from women that have been attacked by another woman without the man even perceiving it. You see, the irony, however, is I'm enough female gendered. I'm probably 10% female gendered. I have enough knowledge of that way of communicating where I've been using these tricks the whole joke. Like when I was saying queer, direct language, direct. Tell us what you want, we'll do it. Direct, queer. What? That's passive aggression. I'm using a trick that women use in conversation to say something without saying anything. And that's what layers the joke, where it's not just man's point of view from man with man language. You throw in a little bit of the other side, and it allows you to really just get the genders just loving each other. All right, let's continue.
The thing, women have a lot more power than they realize. If you give us a direct order, we'll do it, because we want to. We want to feel like a man who protects you and makes you happy. That's why we're on the planet. And this world can make men feel pretty emasculated. You know, it's like, well, no way, I got a root for you. It's like, there's no more dragons, you know? And so if you make us feel like a man, we'll do anything. If you're like, hey baby, I'm really cold, will you give me a blanket? Oh, that's good. You need me? If I don't come back, I love you. And now you're on a mission. And it's even more powerful if you give us some encouragement. We're like, baby, you're so good at getting blankets. And now in your mind going, she sees something in me. Maybe I didn't even know about myself. I guess I am good at getting blankets. Then you go to the blanket area. There's a lot of options now. And you don't want to disappoint your queen.
See, there's truth in that. And everyone's had that coach or that teacher that told them they were smart or fast, even maybe if they didn't even deserve it. And you want to now reach for what they reach. And I think that a lot of privilege in the world is not what people think it is. Privilege to me is cultural, where if you're from a culture with high expectations, usually you reach higher because you don't want to let the people down that believe you're better than you might even be at that moment. And that's a powerful thing. And if women know how to use that when directing men, they're more powerful. Like if you say, like, if you literally look at someone like they are something better than they are, I'm telling you, they will try and be that because it opens a possibility. It lets them create an image of themselves in their head, even if it's a moment that now exists and they could be that person. And the fact I'm talking about getting a blanket is why it's funny, because that's such a silly example. But isn't all of life silly in its own way? All right, let's keep
going. She sees you as a man. So you're like, what's the best one? I want to blow her fucking mind. You're like, that one's too thin. That one, I'm pretty sure, is covered in cum. Like, everyone's got a blanket. It's like, you don't let your nieces sleep with. Like, not that blanket. That was from that camping trip and no one dragged me. And then you see the red blanket. Like, that's the one. Yeah. You're like Jason with his fleece. You know, you come back, and you put it around your girl, and you tuck it in, you take pride in that. But this is what we need, ladies, this is important. We need approval that the task has been completed. Right? Don't just sit there with a blanket at that point, because now we're in this constant state of agitation and insecurity. And we're like, should I got in your mom line? Like, good. And then finally, you're just like, did I do good? And I was just like, yeah, you did good, baby. You're such a man. You're like, yes. And then, you know, Van Halen starts playing in your head. And that's it. And that's all it is. There's no more. Like, there's no more to figure out with men. We want to make you happy. And if that was just the case, it'd be fine. But the opposite is also true. Women want to do good things for you. They're very thoughtful, selfless. They put others first. They're wonderful, warm, horny. They want to fuck you. Bad. Unless you tell them to. Then they don't.
Yeah, that needs that high voice. Then they don't. Because that sells the joke. But that's another thing that it accomplishes a lot of good things. It for one, shows that men aren't alone, that everybody's girl has turned them down, including myself. You know, I'm in a power position. I'm on a stage. I'm lit. I have a microphone. People paid to see me. So there's assumptions that, like, you know, maybe I just get unlimited pussy. That there's a end game. That, like, people in the right position, their wives never turn them down, which isn't true. And it also shows that men shouldn't be as aggressive. You know, you can play aggression games with someone if you sense that they want that. But demanding sex is a turnoff for women. You know, they can be in a mood where they want that, you know, a half an hour a month, but you can't bet on that. And when you give the space like this, it sounds on the surface like an idiot would think that this is misogynistic or sexist. And there's idiots. Trust me. This is why I'm having an issue with the political correct people, because they would say this is sexist, when in fact I'm enforcing a very non-rapey state of mind for men, with the reward being sex. And I'm also establishing a better way to communicate. So that's the irony of a lot of these progressive ideals, is they actually reinforce the opposite of what they claim to do. All right, so it's
so true. These are facts. You know, here's two scenarios. Here's what you should do. If you come home and your girl's there, just be like, hey, baby, I had a really bad day. You look amazing. I love you. Don't say one more word. Just find a window and look out the window. That space lets her fill in the blanks in a very positive way, more than you deserve. You know, emptiness is what makes them flourish for some fucking reason. So she's like, look at him, look out that window. What are we thinking about? At this point, you're wondering who put the letter S in the word lisp. You can't say it without lisping if you have a lisp. Like, of all the letters, is that intentional? You're like, dude, let's throw an S in there and let these fuckers struggle with it. But don't say that out loud. Say nothing. Because then that's when they start being like, oh, he works so hard. Look at him. Look at that fine ass. And then they do something really thoughtful that you would never do for yourself. You know, she'd be like, I'm going to make him some hot cocoa. Like, I love hot cocoa. I'm like, pants? Like, I don't think of doing something good for myself. But she's like, he loves hot chocolate. So she brings it over, she's like, here, baby, have some hot cocoa. We all have bad days. I love you. And I'm like, thank you. How'd you know I like this? And she's like, because I pay attention. I'm like, I don't know what I'd do without you. And the next thing you know, you're inside of her. Right? But you're also holding a mug of hot cocoa. So it's a dicey situation. You want it to start just unleashing, but safety first. You know, you're an expert on Europe. Okay, here's another scenario that's infinitely more probable. That never happens. I've never had sex with cocoa. That's a pipe dream.
Okay, so you see what's happening here. It's important that I objectify myself. I don't know why, it just helps. Like when I say, look at that fine ass. Because then when I say I'm inside of her, it's like I'm creating characters that are giving consent. And I'm also showing that the absence of words sometimes in the right situation, like all the negativity that women put on you with the blanket is now positive with the cocoa, because with all that emotion and creativity that they will put in your backstory with why you didn't bring them a blanket, about, you know, you not loving them and whatnot, now they're giving to you when you have a bad day, when you set it up properly. And so and then there's, you know, I'm setting this scenario that's funny, but the big laugh is that I say I've never even achieved this, but it is theoretically possible. All right, now I'm gonna let this baby just go to the
end. I can't be quiet, myself included. I don't know how to do that. This one is more common. You come home, you're like, hey, baby, I had a bad day. Make me cocoa. You feel that in the room? It's their instinct. You think that's my job, to make you cocoa? And I'm like, damn right it's your job. You know what else is your job? Then you unzip. You pull out your flaccid penis. You say, it looks like someone's got a double shift tonight. So why don't you clock in? At that point, she'll take the cocoa, she'll burn your dick with it. Now you have no dick, you have no cocoa, you become your own Snapped episode, and women around the world go, that's what happens. Thank you.
That works because it's true. And I can tag, every time I watch something I do, I think of all the other options that I've done or can do. You know, that's already a long bit. But, you know, when you take out your flaccid penis in your ill-fitting pants. You know, because the joke is the irony of my confidence compared to a pathetic scene. And men have this ability of always being proud of their penis, even if it looks silly. But my point of all of this is that men and women are fucking different. Whoa, that was time crazy. My dryer keeps buzzing. Yeah, men and women are different. Our genders are different. Everything about us is different. And these differences need to be mocked, rejoiced, discussed, because that's the only way. These couples, I've gotten emails and tweets and Facebook messages of couples literally saying, thank you for everything. Like, it makes you get along better if you acknowledge what we are. Now, of course, there's crossovers. You know, my wife's more handy than me. I play piano and sometimes cry when I watch movies. But in general, you know, the curves are like this. There's crossover, but there also isn't. And that's why I care about the PC shit. Because if you take away gender, that joke doesn't exist. I can be sued by the government for that joke. Canada does it. So that's the only reason I give a shit. Sometimes people are like, oh, and everybody likes your male-female stuff and piano and all the fun, goofy, big bear, feed the bear. I'm like, yeah. And if you like all that shit, know that you also need to like free speech. And you also need to like accepting differences in human beings. Not repressing people, suppressing people, taking rights from people. All bad, right? Anybody should be allowed to be anything that they feasibly can do in the marketplace. You know? But in the end of the day, we're different. So thanks for listening to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin. Go to blueapron.com/Owen for 3 free meals, free shipping, awesome food. My wife and I cook it together. We feed our little baby it. We bond. Then sometimes I'm inside of her if I do the creme fraiche properly, the creme fraiche. And also support patreon.com/WDTL if you want to donate to keep this thing moving. Because I love doing it. And I will never be on television because television is to divide people. These jokes don't end up on most networks. I mean, I'm not trying to be a dick, but that's clearly funnier than most stand-up jokes. They're like, hey, I'm Aziz Ansari. I'm brown. White people are fucking assholes. Well, you know, Indians make more per capita than Caucasians in America because culture is more fucking important than race. Sorry for not being a racist. You see a lot of that. A lot of, like, we're all different, so let's get real different. Because that, for some reason, division gets promoted. And you see it with Fox and MSNBC and all these CNN and all this shit. It's red team, blue team, fucking hate each other and sell bullshit to people that they don't need. I'm selling catharsis and I'm selling laughter, which is what I got into this for. I didn't get in this to get rich. I like money. I like, you know, security, feeding my family. But I'm not, I want to see the crowd emotionally come. Like they have this come face. Like those laughs. Ah, you literally see them go, fuck yeah. You're like, they come. And I wouldn't trade that shit for anything. If I'm doing Madison Square Garden, but I got to act like a fucking asshole. No. No. I'm going to act like a man. And I love you guys so much. And hugepianist.com for tour dates. I probably shouldn't have just randomly attacked people for no reason. I have that problem sometimes. Everyone's doing their thing. God bless everybody. I'm sure that dude's pretty funny on someone. I don't know why he gets under my skin. I think it's because of the racism push. I really don't like racism. And everyone says white people can't say that. That's insane. As a World War II history major, someone used to live in the Czech Republic. Someone who's had relatives, you know, put in gas chambers and shit. Were the Nazis not racist in 1928? If it's about power, this perceived power, which, by the way, there is no racial hierarchy in America. We just had a black president for 8 fucking years, guys. Ha ha ha. But even without that, even if white people do have all this power, even though the trailer parks say otherwise, but let's say they do. Even though the rhetoric also is that they're like white trash, redneck, you know, fucking Bible thumping, mouth breathing retards. Let's say they do have all that power. Racism's still racism. When Hitler and his butt fucking idiots, the Nazis were trying to take over Germany, they didn't have power. They're the underdogs. If you read the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, it reads almost like the Mighty Ducks. They were still racist. That whole, you know, racial supremacy shit. Whether you have power or not, An ideology based on racial supremacy and racial division is racism. And until you fucking stop dividing people based on races, life is gonna suck. But life is good and life is beautiful. And thanks for sticking with me on this analyzation. And I find that like more working class people and smart professionals like this stuff, people that don't have to work for a living, like the trust fund kids, the liberals, the liberal elite, they usually don't like jokes like that because they have 91 genders. And I find, I love science, big fan. And I found that there's something called speciation, where species keep splitting and splitting and splitting. It happened on the Galapagos Islands and all these places, something called birds of paradise, where when a certain species is confronted with no natural predators, evolution is based not on survival, but on sexual procreation. So like you get these big plumes and these things that don't keep the animal alive, but it attracts mates. Because when you have no predators, you get to put all your calories into these big plumes and be different based on how your feathers look. You put one fucking raccoon on any of those islands, they're all dead because they didn't evolve to survive. Now, that's why I know for a fact this progressive PC shit will not last, because you're not developing social skills for survival. You're developing these plumages and these infinite divisions because there's no fucking wolves on your island. I love you.